Avodah Torah Adif?
Just the kitzur. I know we spoke about it already, but just a few. So we'll repeat some of the things we already said, but in context, and then we'll just do a couple of quick biurim on the Tosfos that we spoke about already. The Tosfos discussing the difference between Yanei HaMelech versus Kavanah Torah. Why did Yanei have to stand? So we talked about it a little bit, but we'll try to be mavar a little bit better. The difference between Isser V'Heter versus Dinei Momonos in that regard, and a few nice little things, and we'll try to expand. We kept mentioning the Turi Evan and Megillah about being mochel on Kavanah Torah, so then we'll see some of the sources in that, and then I guess after Mania is over we'll move to the sugya. We'll try to knock off the sugya Midvar Sheker Tirchuk and take it from there. We'll see where we are at that point. Okay, so that's but for today, just a very very general Kavanah Brios Sikum. This is lifted shamelessly from the weekly shir, which just got ripped. Sorry about that. It's just the weekly shir of Rav Shiur Meirino Rav Shlita, which is Rav Asher Weiss Shlita. This is nothing. I'm adding virtually nothing to this shir. I'm stealing the entire thing, and that's okay, you know. But it's. I think it's a nice. You know, Kedarko Bakodesh, he gives a nice hekif over the whole topic, and he just I think it'll be a nice way to sort of organize in our minds the concept of Kavanah Brios based on all the details we've been working on. So now we can sort of have a nice place to put it in our minds. Okay, so first he starts off as is his derech that he goes through the different the six different places in Shas where the Chachamim discussed the concept of Kavod Abriya. So we've discussed at length two of the six that he mentions, which is number one is the sugya of Hamotzi Kilayim Bevigdo, or Hamotzi Kilayim Beshuk, depending on whether you like the Rosh's Girsa or the Rambam's Girsa. That is talking about you yourself are wearing the Kilayim, or somebody else is wearing the Kilayim. But either way, the Gemara concludes, and we saw this psak in the Rambam, that if a person is wearing shatnez de oraisa, he has the chiyuv to remove the shatnez, or you have the chiyuv to remove the shatnez from somebody else, perhaps, even in public, even though it'll be terribly embarrassing for the person. Similarly, if he's wearing shatnez de rabbanon, or on the other hand, if he's wearing shatnez derabanan, then there is no chiyuv to remove the shatnez, and you can wait until you get home, take them off, slash wait until you get home to tell the guy that he's wearing shatnez, and that he can change in private. Okay, that is case number one. Case number two, Gemara Menachos, Andav Lamed Zayin and Mebeis. So this is a similar idea, but it's not based on removing your clothing as much as based on not carrying. Right, so we have this is the Brisker Gemara in this regard. Right, so Ravina Ava Kozel Abasre de Mar Baravashi b'Shabbat de Rigla. So Ravina was following Mar Baravashi. It was the Shabbos. He was going to give a big drasha on the Yontif. If Sikarna de Chute v'lo Amale v'lo Midi. So what happened is one of his corners, the tzitzis became puzzle. One of the corners ripped off of his baguette. And now what's wrong? What's he doing wrong at this point? Is that what we're worried about over here? Right, meaning he's wearing a beged with gimel kanfos with tzitzis, right? So normally, who cares, right? Okay, so you want to wear a beged, you don't make a bracha when you make tzitzis, so it's no big deal. You don't make a bracha levatala if you want to be a weirdo and put tzitzis on a beged that has three corners, so you're doing absolutely nothing. It's a complete waste of your time and it's a foolish thing to do. But lemaisa, it's not the world's biggest deal. But comes along Shabbos, and now you're carrying, because those tzitzis provide no positive influence in your life whatsoever, and you're schlepping them along. They're not officially decorative in any way. They don't make the beged look nicer per se, and they're just there l'shem mitzvah, but they're not being mekayim any mitzvah, and therefore it's a problem. Right, so that's why I said it's the Brisker Gemara, because there's some briskers who are choshish for the shita of the Baal Amor that we generally assume the Mishnah that says atcheles eino ma'akeves es alavim, right? That the tcheles is not ma'akev. They're two different mitzvahs. There's the mitzvah to wear tzitzis of just white strings, and the mitzvah to wear tzitzis of just of blue as well. So the tchelis is not ma'akin the lavan, and the lavan is not ma'akin the tchelis. And therefore, that's the standard psak according to the vast majority of the Rishonim, that even b'zman hazeh, that we don't have tchelis, we still wear white tzitzis, it's not 100% established by all poskim that we have tchelis, and therefore the mitzvah to wear white has subsisted throughout the generations, that we still have the mitzvah to wear white, although they say the Baal HaMor never wore tzitzis. Why? Because he paskined that tchelis is ma'akev the lavan, and therefore, if you would be wearing only the white strings, you'd be wearing a beged of dalet kanfos, and you would not be fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis, and therefore, you're not allowed to wear dalet kanfos bizman hazeh, since you're not fulfilling the mitzvah. So, obviously, we don't paskin like that Baal HaMor. But because there is what to be choshesh for that Baal HaMor, so some briskers did not wear tzitzis on Shabbos, even when there was an Eruv, because that's key with there's nothing. And therefore, they didn't want to be wearing tzitzis in a Carmelis even, or certainly not in a Rosh Hashanah, so that they would be in violation of the Yisr of carrying these four strings on your beged, which are not accomplishing the mitzvah. Okay, but Lamais, in this Gemara, everyone will agree that this was an Isser of carrying because of the three-cornered garment, the tzitzis are accomplishing nothing. So Kimat Levesa, when he got back home, Amarlei Mehalsim Ifsik, he told him, you should know that they ripped off, and it happened in the street. So Amarlei Yamidli Mehalsim Shadisa, if you would have told me at the time, I would have taken them off. Well, why did you make me schlep around with my puzzle tzitzis on? Made me carry in public. It's covered abrios and it's doche the losa say the Torah. Meaning I shouldn't have to remove my garment in public. So tirgamur rav bar shava kamei derav kano bilav de lo saser. So he says no, that's only an iser derabanan. So that's why he said I would have taken them off over there because it would have been in mashma from the first lashon of the Gemara would have been an iser daraisa, and therefore I should have taken off the tzitzis at that point. So he says some say the opposite of the story happened a little differently. Same halacha but just different story, right? Well, some say that Ravina told him on the spot. He told him, "Ah, Rebbe, your beged ripped, so now you have to take it off." So Amalei, why? Lemishtiye, you think I have to take it off? We know that it's covered abrius. I shouldn't have to walk around without the talis on. But isn't that only when it's an issur derabanan? Hachanami karmelis derabanan. They were in a karmelis, and therefore the second version of the story is it wasn't only an issur derabanan, and he told him take them off. And he told him back. And either way, you like the story. Ravina was wrong, and Mar Bar Avashi gave it to him, right? So he said either the first version of the story is that it was talking about Rosh Hashanah Doraisa, and he told him he didn't tell him to take him off, and he said, "Ah, you should have told me to take him off." Or the second version of the story is that it was talking about an Isser Dirabanan, and he told him to take him off. He said, "I don't have to take them off. It's covered abrios." Either way, that's the second source that Rav Asher quotes for Kavod Abrios in the Torah. So we see that over here we have, we're Docha and Issa Derabanan of Kilayim, and we're also Docha and Issa Derabanan of carrying in a Carmelis. Number three, I should have got this Gemara. For some reason he quotes some of these inside and some of them not. I should have gotten this Gemara, sorry. All right, I won't read it inside, but... What? That's it. I'm worried I'm going to run out of time. I want to finish this today for sure.
Why do we not view the tzitzit as carrying the beged?
Because it's not, first of all. It's clearly an extra attachment that provides. So you have two choices. When you're dealing with carrying, you have choices of it's some type of a beged. It's serving a functional purpose, or some type of a tachshit. It's serving, it's beautiful. It looks very nice. Right? So here, it's neither. It's really just serving the purposes of the mitzvah. It's not, you know.
So you're not physically carrying out. It happens to be on your bag.
Yeah, that's carrying. You know, yeah. Very important. The tie clip people and the different, like, so sometimes you go to, I don't remember, when I stayed for Shabbos in Washington Heights as infrequently as possible. Once in a while, I stayed for Shabbos in Washington Heights. Not, by the way, that's not knocking people who do stay in. It's great. But personally, I didn't. One of the reasons was the carrying issue at the time. I don't know what the situation is now. At the time, there really wasn't an Erev. And certainly, obviously, there's never going to be an Erev that everybody holds of. But there wasn't even an Erev that I would hold of. So you had to get a special key belt where the key was part of the belt. Because you couldn't just, like, so somebody said, why don't you get one of those key tie clips? And it has to be actually that the key is doing something, that it's serving a function. It's not just some, because, like, nobody would wear a key. Like, somebody's like, oh, why don't you just put it on a necklace and wear it around your neck? No, that doesn't work. That's not. Nobody would consider, under normal circumstances, a necklace, a key on a chain, would be some type of an actual takshit that a person would enjoy wearing and showing to his friends. So that's not really acceptable. It would have to be something where it actually serves a function of the beged in some way. So they had made these belts where it could hold, I think, two keys. They made the belts where you'd have, like, it was a double, they had all these holes in the leather. It looked awful. And, like, you have these big holes in the leather, and then instead of this, you know, the metal thing over there, you could insert the key, and the key would keep the belt closed. So it was actually serving some kind of a function. It was all kinds of fun trying to get in the door, like, pulling, whatever. It's ridiculous. So yeah.
Muslim. Your clothing by you keep layering it on yourself.
Right.
So is that?
Yeah, you have to see those sugis inside and figure out what's going on in all those cases, right? So that's okay. Well, it has to be serving some kind of a function under normal circumstances for it to be acceptable, right? Okay. So that is so here we're talking in Shabbat Tzadik Dalam Beis, they're talking about if you have a dead body in the house. Rashi explains over there that there's some situation where it's worse to have the body inside the house, and you avoided the problem of muktza. You put a kikar or a katan on the same thing that you're carrying the dead body, so there's not a problem of tiltum muktza, and it was a problem of the body. Let's say the body was sitting right under a skylight. And it was going to rot over the course of Shabbos, so they were makel, and they said you could take the body outside of the house and put it in a karmelis where it would be under the shade, or it would be protected from the elements in some way, and it would be a better situation, and that was mishum kavod abrius as well. So they matir another case of hotzal the karmelis under those circumstances because it was a case of kavod abrius. This is an interesting factor, and we've been discussing it in terms of Meis Mitzvah of Kavod Abrius. So this is a new type of Kavod Abrius that we were talking about before. The first two types of Kavod Abrius, we were talking about a case of where the person himself would feel a great deal of embarrassment. Here, we're talking about the mace feels no embarrassment. The person is dead. The person is not experiencing, whatever they're experiencing, the Olam Emes they're experiencing, okay. But Lamaisa, we don't assume that a dead body feels a sense of busha, and it doesn't even sound like it's busha to the family or anything like that in terms of Kavod HaBris. It just sounds like be mechabed the body, it's still considered Kavod HaBris, be mechabed a dead body, because Lamaisa, the dead body is someone. And therefore, you should treat that someone, even when he's not alive, with a certain minimal amount of respect, that they shouldn't be laid to rot and not buried, etc., etc. So that's also just interesting to note, and we haven't mentioned this before, that one of the primary examples of Kavod HaBrius that we have of the concept of Meis Mitzvah, or in this case, a mace that's mutal bebizayon for even a short time, is one of the, is one where the person itself doesn't feel any embarrassment. It's just that we want to give kavod to a body of a human being. Okay. Then the next case, the two cases are really related to the Beis HaKiseh. I have to honestly say I never really understood exactly how the mechanisms worked in those days in terms of how they would be mekaneach themselves after the Beis HaKiseh. I just, as whenever I read these Gemaras, I'm almost, almost want to add a new bracha to the Birchas HaShachar, I was born in the 20th century when we had, regular toilet paper, and it's really a tremendous zechus to be, it's a good time to be alive in the times of running water and all these things, and it's really Baruch Hashem. We should really be appreciative of these things whenever you learn these sugyas. Okay, well, Lamaisa, we know that rocks are mukta. We know that rocks are mukta. And Lamaisa, we also know that certain times it's a tircha to carry them. So, in the Gemara and Shabbos on Daf Pe'al on the base, they talk about is it mutter to carry certain size rocks to the base Akisa, even though they're muktzah, and even though there might be, it's mutter to carry them up to the roof because even though it's going to be a tirchi yisera, and they were because of kavod abriyah. So under those circumstances, we were makel. And similarly in the Gemara and Erevin, so on Mem Aleph Amid Beis, he says that it's mutter to, let's say you have a situation where you were taken against your will, chutz l'tchum, right? Sometimes you were on a, whatever the case was, you were kidnapped, or you fell asleep on a train, or you fell asleep in a taxi, or whatever it is, and you ended up outside of the tchum, so you're kone, you're makom, right there, and you're stuck. You have dalet amos in every direction, so you have to sort of like make a nice circle around yourself, and then realize you have dalet amos in every direction that you can walk. So the problem is, if you have to use the beis hakiseh, so it's going to be very, very unpleasant if you're only kone dalet amos. So therefore, the chachamim were makel mishum kavod abriyos, that you should be able to walk far away from the makom where you're supposed to be on Shabbos. And then you can use the base of Kisei over there. One of the mandamim in the Gemara over there says, and if he's smart, he'll make sure that he walks inside the tchum. And then once he's there, so he can go home. So that's another case. Those are two cases of kavod abriyos benogeya to inyani beis hakiseh. And that's really a different kind of kavod abriyos as well. Meaning before we were talking about case number one, there's a busha to the individual. Case number two, there's a busha to a dead body. Case number three now, we have a case where you yourself will be experiencing not embarrassment, but extreme discomfort/disgust. So that's a new kind of kavod abriyos that we have over here. And similarly, we have a case with the last example that he brings is also from the Gemara in Brachos, when you're coming back from the funeral and the avel is walking by himself. So we said that the kohen or a nazir or any of these people would be mutter to escort him. This Gemara doesn't say nazir over there. Sorry about that. It would be mutter for a kohen to escort the fellow through a beis hapras. Right, so he's allowed to escort him through a beis hapras, even though that's an issur derabanan for a kohen to go through a beis hapras. We assume that any tumah there is not min haTorah because it was already plowed over into the pachos mikashir. But lemaisa, since there were skeletons buried in this field, we don't want a kohen just running around the field. So we say that it's a mutter. It's mutter to escort the avel through the beis hapras. And again, this is a new type of kavod abriyos of nicham avelim, where it's different than any of the other cases that we had before. We really, again, so let's just summarize what we have so far. Rav Asher puts it into four categories. I think we'd have the same four that we've been talking about so far, which is number one, the person should not be embarrassed publicly. Number two, a dead body should not be placed in any kind of derech bizon. Number three, a person shouldn't have to feel any kind of disgust in the place of the beis hakiseh. Number four, a person should not have to feel a sense of loneliness and extreme sadness. You have this avil, he's coming back from the funeral, so he feels a sense of sadness. He feels, and like, this is a time where you need people around you. You need support. And this guy is going to walk home all by himself. Where's the support? You know, so therefore, you want to give the guy some kind of support, so you want to be around him, right? This is you're so good when it comes to nicham avelim. I am not any kind of expert in nicham avelim, but one thing I can tell you is, a number of years ago, if you haven't seen it, you really should because it's tremendous. But they made a video on YouTube, things people say at shiva houses. My sister-in-law was actually sitting shiva for her mother at the time, and she tainted. Not only is everything in that video true, but she said she could just make a video herself of even worse things that people say at shiva houses. And I've heard from people I've visited. He says, "You'll never believe it." Nebuch, one time, a chashuv rav lost a child. He said to a friend of mine, "He says you're never going to believe how many neviim we have in our town." says how many people know exactly what their Ribbono Shel Olam is thinking and what he's doing and why he does it. Says everybody's telling me, and it's interesting how their stories conflict. But he was really whatever comfort they were seeking to give him by offering him all the reasons why Nebuchadnezzar lost a child. It didn't work. It was not successful, and it was hurtful that he felt that you don't know. Stop trying to make things up. And it was painful for this particular Rav to have to hear these things. So the real Yisod, and the Gemara is giving you this Yisod, the real Yisod of Nichum Avelim is what the Avel needs. The Avel needs support. How the support's going to manifest itself? It depends. Depends on the Avel. You know, I told this to somebody recently, that Rabbi Kellerman, when he was from West Hempstead. So when he was a Rav, his first Rabbanus was in Boston. So he sat Shiva for one of his parents when he was a Rav in Boston, and he said people were coming to visit him and he wasn't doing the trick. He wasn't feeling any nechama. And he said the Rav Soloveitchik came to visit him and he sat down, he didn't say anything. And he just sat there for about 15 minutes and they were both quiet. And then it was time for him to leave. So he looked at him, he shook his head, and he just gave a krechts. And he says, ah! And he said, that krechts was like the real nechama that he had. He's like, he just wanted to be supported. He just wanted somebody to commiserate with him in a little bit of his pain. So some in some way, Rav Soloveitchik understood that was what was helpful at that time. You know, so okay, so nice. That's the Yisod the Gemara is giving over here. Just don't let the Avel walk home by himself. Are you going to have to tell him all kinds of brilliant Torahs on the way home? You don't need to tell him any brilliant Torahs on the way home. And that's what we have, the whole Takana of Suda Savra, right? That the Avel shouldn't have to be matriach themselves from to prepare for themselves, etc. It's not. It's to give them support, and once you're supporting the person, you'll see what they actually need. You know, once you're there to help, so then you actually end up being helpful. If you're there to do what you think help is, then sometimes you'll be successful in helping, and sometimes you won't be successful. But if you're there to actually be supportive, you'll always be successful. Okay, fine. So those are your four types of kavod habris that we find in Shas. So now Rav Asher wants to know. So is that it? Are we limited to those four types of kavod habrios? Meaning it's very dangerous and a slippery slope, right? Oh, everything is mutter mishum kavod habrios. So basically you could throw out any issur derabanan mishum kavod habrios, because right, we see that the kavod habrios docha, and Chazal had a fairly wide ranging definition of kavod habrios. So do we have the right to apply this in other places? So the most machmer shita in applying kavod habrios, in not applying kavod habrios, excuse me, and obviously you understand when it comes to kavod habrios, there are no kulas and there are no chumras, because every kula in the din is a chumra against kavod habrios, and every chumra mitzad kavod habrios is a kula against the din. So that you can't call one thing a kula or a chumra in this case, because it's just which one you're choosing to be machmer on, which one you're choosing to be mekel on. So he quotes the Tshuvas HaRivash, where the case over there was that there was a child who was born on Chol Hamoed, or the child was born on Sukkot, and they didn't have any baby clothes for the child, and they thought it would be nice for the kid if they could make nice new clothing for the baby to wear to the Bris Milah, right? Sometimes I can't even remember exactly what my boys wore to their Bris. Where did their bris? But I think they had some fancy. Now I remember. Okay, I think my mother bought some kind of outfit for my, and it had like one of those chin strap yarmulkes and whatever. And I think so. Whatever. Nice. People buy cute, fancy clothes for the Bris Milah so that so the kid can wear it. Okay. So this fellow wanted to know if he was allowed to hire somebody to make the clothes. In those days, they made clothes instead of buying clothes, and they wanted to know, is it mutter to do? And that would be considered, obviously, some kind of a maisa uman on Chol Hamoed, which is generally forbidden, right? You're not allowed to hire a tailor or some type of expert to do that type of work on Chol Hamoed, even if it's a tzorech for the moed itself. You have to really subsist on a maisa hedyot under those circumstances. So So the Rivash is machmer. He says you're not allowed. He says you could borrow, you can do other things, and he gives a whole bunch of reasons why he thinks it's a problem. And one of the reasons is he says basically, maybe it's covered abrios. Maybe the parents will be embarrassed that the kid never has to wear borrowed clothing. So he says, first of all, some people dafka want to wear borrowed clothing. He says you can't prove that it's objectively covered abrios. And then he also says, plus it's not for us to be medama milsa and to make up new cases of covered abrios. We're not in a position where we can just start making up when it is covered abrios, when it's not covered abrios. So we only take the cases that Chazal gave us, and that's the end of it. We don't make up new cases of covered abrios. Chazal didn't mention the concept of wearing not such nice clothing, or your family, your kids wearing not such nice clothing to a simcha as a case of violation of covered abrios, and therefore we're not going to say so either. So whether or not the Rivash meant this 100% is unclear, because he uses it just as what we would call a sniff. He uses it as one factor that he throws in his psak. It wasn't the main factor necessarily, but he just threw it in there as a possibility. So you could say, well, he threw it in there because he believes in it. Right, obviously he believes in it. There's no question. The question is to what extent does he hold that this is an ironclad rule? Or was it just like, Lemaisa, we're not looking to make up new cases of covered abrius, Kolzman, that it's not absolutely necessary, and he didn't view this case as very necessary at all. So it's hard to know, but Lemaisa, he said what he said. We don't make up new cases, Mishum covered abrius. So, okay. So that's the Rivash Shita. However, we see clearly that this was not the standard practice, neither from the Rishonim, nor from the Achronim, and they do in fact apply this klal of covered abrius to other cases. First of all, he brings in a few other cases where they're not in the Gemara, not in the Talmud Bavli, but they are sourced in Chazal, even though they doesn't have the standard shita of gadol covered abrius. He points out that one case in it's paskin in the Gemara, it's paskin in Shulchan Aruch, and it's really based on the Yerushalmi. Which is, let's say there's a person who, and it's in Hilchos Avelus. Let's say there's a person, he sits down to take a haircut. So I have a klal gadol, you know. The one advantage to my excellent hairstyle that I have is that I want to get in and out of that chair in, you know, under 3 minutes would be nice. So this guy, he wants a nice haircut. He's sitting there for a while. So he's sitting, getting a very nice haircut, takes a half hour. And 15 minutes into the haircut, somebody comes and tells him that unfortunately a close relative of his just passed away, and now he's going to be an avelus. So he's got himself a problem. He has a half a haircut here. So he, you know, he's half is Harvey Dent and half is not, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. So he doesn't know what to do. He has half a haircut. So the Beis Yosef quotes from Yerushalmi, quotes from Eva Rabbaz, he quotes from Yerushalmi that it is it's mutter to complete the haircut, right? And he doesn't explain why. He just says that it's mutter to complete the haircut. However, if you look in the some of the Rishonim, did I give you the Mordechai there? I don't think I gave you the Mordechai, but I think the Nosei Kalim quote that it's the Shita of the Mordechai. That it's based on the concept of gadol kavod abrius, because obviously it's extremely embarrassing to walk around with half a haircut or half a shave, you know, or something to that effect. It doesn't look right. Maybe like after Tisha B'Av, people do stuff like that, but they do it for a few minutes, then they do the rest, you know. So that's it's not something that we're looking to walk around with on a regular basis. That's one example also that does come from Chazal, but was applied after the fact in a case that we don't find explicitly in Chazal, that's Mishum Kavod Abrius. Similarly, if you learn Hilchos Muktzah, so one of the categories of Hilchos Muktzah is Garav Shel Ri'i, right, which is has multiple pronunciations. You can pronounce every word except for shel, well, differently. They said grof shel rei, right? Garof shel rei, whatever. You can pronounce it however you want. But lemaisa, it's a case where there is something disgusting in the middle of the house or somewhere in the house. Welcome, and it's good to see you. So it's something which we don't like to have in the in the middle of the house, and we're matir removing it from the person's presence. Ironically, we're not matir moving it into a carmelis, because that wasn't necessary, right? We're matir moving it away from anywhere where people are going to be, because it's disgusting. People shouldn't have to do it. So Rashi in Maseches Beitza, as well as the Rashba in also the same place. The Rashba and Beitza is both on Daf Lamed Vav. So Rashi uses a lashna of the Tira Mishum Kvodo, and the Rashba says specifically Mishum Kavod Abrios. Both cases, we know that this concept of Garav Shori, getting rid of a disgusting thing, is Mutter Mishum Kavod Abrios, and we don't apply the idea of Muktza to it, and you don't even need any of the regular heterim that we use. We don't need Tiltum and Atzad under those circumstances. Just Rashba writes that it's Mutter to move it, even not in a Kli, because of Kavod Abrios. So again, it's not clear that this is a brand new halacha that the Rishonim came up with, but it was definitely, they were understanding the application of Chazal, which created these heterim, was based on Kavod Abrios as well. Okay, but it's important to keep in mind also, when in the case of Garav Shalri'i, that, like I said, you're not allowed to bring it into a carmelis per se. Meaning you say, well, Kavod Abrios allowed carrying into a carmelis for Hilchos Beis Akisei, so maybe they allowed carrying into a carmelis for this also. It's really, each case is very unique. You have to specifically apply the rules of each case to that case alone. You can't then say, well, I was allowed to, this is related to Beis Akisei type Kavod Abrios. That's the type of Kavod Abrios where we say it's disgusting and people should not have to be disgusted. So therefore, I was allowed to carry in a carmelis for things that, you know, are disgusting. So, or I was allowed to be metaltel b'muktza for things that are disgusting, so I could take this muktza and put it in a carmelis. Not necessarily. You're only allowed to do the minimal amount, which will be mesalek, the din of Kavod Abrios. And I didn't give you this in the Maamar Makomos, but Rav Asher Weiss quotes the Chavos Yoyer, who's going through the concept. He has a very quick tshuva. If you want to look it up later, it's Siman Reish Lamed Vav. It's a nice little tshuva where he just does a kitzer of all of the cases that he thinks are dechuya, not hutra. Right? He's very into, he says, Shabbos is dechuya, not hutra, and pikuach nefesh, and he goes through all the different cases where he thinks they're all dechuya. So one of the things that he just, a one-liner, he throws in, that Kavod Abrios, whenever we say Kavod Abrios is doche, and it's Sidur Rabbanan, that's also dechuya, not hutra. And therefore, you can only move it to the extent that it's permissible to get it out of the way and no more. And you have to be careful only to do the minimal amount when it comes to this. Okay, now we're going to move on to cases where actually the Achronim invented new heterim because of Kavod Abrios. So there's a psak of the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, and it's a hard sif to read in Shulchan Aruch. Simon Shin Lamed Tes Seif Dalet. The reason is the Mechaber writes one word, and then the Ramah writes two lines. And the Mechaber writes another word, the Ramah writes two lines. So it's one of those hard sifim to read. So you have to actually read them separately. You first read the Mechaber, ignoring all the Ramahs, then you read the Ramahs. It's much better that way. So one of the things over there is listed off things that are Asur on Shabbos based on various Kinyanim. Right? You can't do Kiddushin, you can't do Chalitza, you can't do other things based on Kinyanim that are usher to do on Shabbos. And there the Ramah says, under certain circumstances, we would actually permit not only to do a Kiddushin on Shabbos, but even a Nisuin. We would even permit the Chuppah itself to be on Shabbos. And the Ramah is really talking about a tshuva that he wrote. It's in the Tshuva Ser Ramah, Simen Kuf Chaf Hey, where he tells you the Maisa Shahaya under those circumstances. Basically, the case was, you have this girl, and she's a Yisoma, and the way the Ramah says it is nobody took care of her. Like, her father died suddenly, and her family basically wanted nothing to do with her. And there was, she had this one uncle who took her in and was good to her, and whatever. And then it came time to marry her off, and again, her family did not do the proper diligence to try to make sure everything was taken care of, and they had certain, in those days, you have to understand, up until very recently, all Jewish marriages, and I don't want to say all Jewish marriages, all marriages were arranged. Whether they be Jews or non-Jews, all marriages were arranged, and like all arrangements, it's mostly a business decision. And And so they had a certain nidunya that they were supposed to, you know, provide a certain dowry, and the family of the girl sort of said they were going to provide a certain amount, and the women of the community told the girl, all right, get dressed up, you're going to be a kala, it's going to be great, whatever. And they got her all ready for her chuppah, and they prepared the meal. And in those days, many of the meals happened on Erev Shabbos. Many of the chuppahs happened on Erev Shabbos, and then the meal would be on Friday night itself, even though, if you learn the Gemara, that's not actually permitted. But the Rishonim already talk about it. The Rosh has an Arichas on it, I think, and other Rishonim as well. Maybe the Ran and Ksuvas also. They talk about why it was that the Minhag Yisrael seemed to be going against the Gemara, that you're not supposed to have wedding meals on Friday night. And the simple answer was, it was a situation where they simply could not afford to make a wedding and a Shabbos. Like, you couldn't pull it off. They couldn't do two things in 1 week. So they couldn't have a Shabbos meals and a wedding, and therefore they would have to combine the two. And this way, they made the Seudas Shabbos also the Seudas Nisuin, and they would have, they would invite a large segment of the community to partake, and that would be the community, everybody would bring their Shabbos meals to the wedding, and that's what everybody would eat, and that would be the wedding. A far cry from the third and fourth mortgages that people take out today in order to be able to afford a wedding. Okay, nice. That's the way it is. So in our case, the Ramah talks that basically the chassan shows up, and the relatives of the girl say, we only have a small percentage of the nidunya ready to go. They were missing, I think the Ramah said, approximately one-third of the dowry. And the chassan was not so happy about this. He's like, I agreed to whatever amounts, and I'm not getting married, and whatever. They worked on it, and they eventually hashed out a deal. But it was too late. The wedding feast was already prepared, and everything was ready to go, except there was no chasen and no kala, because Shabbos was upon them, and they had not yet been married. And under those circumstances, the Ramah agreed that he was going to be Mesader the Kiddushin, as well as the Nisuin, on Shabbos itself, and he wrote a decent-sized tshuva to defend his practice. He said, everybody is yelling at me, what are you doing? You're violating the halacha. So I want to defend myself and show that what I did was absolutely 100% mutter. And he writes a whole tshuva about it, defending the practice. But in Shulchan Aruch, he just writes, bekitzer, that under certain circumstances, right, I'll read you the lashon here, he quotes it in the shir, v'yesh matirin l'kadesh heicha de'eino isha uvanim, that's Rabbi Natam Shita, is that maybe you could do kiddushin on Friday night if you haven't fulfilled Purur Revuv. Actually, what then? Hechnisa lechupa shari. Maybe in that case, it's even mutter to have nisuin. V'alfagav the lokaimel and ha'achim mekol makom somchan azev b'shas adchak ki gam ki golo kavod abrius. K'moshu regil nafamim shalohay yecholim lahashvos im hanidunya biyom vav adalayla. As it happens sometimes, I don't know if it happened that often, but it happened to the Ramah. So he writes, so as it happens sometimes that they can't settle on the nidunya until Friday night. Right, they already prepared everything. Everybody's invited to the wedding. Everybody's coming, and the food is ready. Right, it says, it would be very embarrassing to the chassan and kala if they would not be able to have the wedding. Everybody would say, everybody in town would be talking, oh, the wedding's delayed because the chassan, like everything else in life. Some people would take the chassan side, some people would take the kala side, and it's very not a very good situation. So mikol makom lechatchila yesh lezar shelo yavo lidei kach. So the Ramah says, lemaisa, let's be more careful so we don't have to rely on any of these kulas, and let's take care of business during business hours. Let's take care of things when we're actually able to take care of things. Okay, but the Ramah, you see a tremendous chiddush of the Ramah, that we're going to be matir, a serious isser derabanan of kinyanim on Shabbos, maso matan, where we're going to allow kiddushin and nisuin on Shabbos itself, because of the busha to the chassan and the kala. I think if you look in the Mishnah Brura over there, he tries to conclude that Halacha l'maisa, you shouldn't do it unless you have all the factors. Meaning, also it's a marriage where the person hasn't fulfilled pururvu yet, and there was one other factor I think that they mentioned over there that the Mishnah Berurah says it's better to have. But that's the only time we really want to be makel on all the things. Historically, it's very interesting to note that when they used to have these weddings on Friday night, the Seuda on Friday night, they also had musical accompaniment. They also had a band. I don't know if it was a one-man band or it was a multiple-man band. They had a guy who would play music at these weddings. So when the early, like very, very short period of time, the early Reform movement wanted to have an organ played only by a guy in the shuls, so they were so mech on that heter of the Shulchan Aruch that says, well, you could have a guy play music in the, you know, at the weddings on Friday night, so why should this be any worse than that? We should have a guy, you know, we should be allowed to have a guy playing music inside the shuls as well. Okay, so the different poskim wrote different reasons why they didn't think it was the simplest reason, as they said, there's a mitzvah to be mesameach the chasan and mekala. There's no mitzvah to be besimcha during davening. Well, you hope people daven out of simcha, but it's not a mitzvah. It's not an obligation that they have good music during davening. So that was the simplest dechia of that. All right, lemaisa, that style of reform lasted very, very short, like between 5 and 10 years. That was it. Like, where basically the only difference, there was the tiny little differences between what we would call regular Orthodox minyanim and those types of reform minyanim, and then unfortunately things went south very, very, very quickly from there. So it was. But that was, it's interesting to note that was one of their original heterim. They wanted to be somech on these cases where they used to have the wedding feasts on Friday night. Okay, similarly, by the way, based on this comment of the Ramah, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he wants to be mater. Normally, we hold like the shach, that when a baby is born, you have to wait a certain amount of time, right? You have to wait basically 29 and a half days, till you do the pidyon haben, and this fellow had made a mistake, and he didn't wait the necessary amount of time till the pidyon haben, but he already invited everybody to the pidyon haben, and then he wanted to make the suda, and it would be very embarrassing to him to cancel it at that point. So Rav Moshe was mekel, and he said you can have the pidyon haben be somich on the shita of the Magen Avram. Against the shach, even though the minhag olam was to be passing like the shach, because it's already late in the game. And he quoted this Ramah that sometimes we're makel on an isur derabbanan or a din derabbanan when it comes to kavod abrios, even in a new type of case which has never been mentioned by Chazal. So he says, just like the Ramah was makel by weddings, you have a sudas eris and a nisuin, or you could have the eris and a nisuin on Shabbos. So too, you could have the pidyon haben misomech on the sheet of the Magen Avram that you've waited long enough. Fine. The next case when I first saw it, I was blown away by it. It was a little while ago already, but I was blown away by it. But Lamaisa, this is an example of what Tosfos. Remember we saw the two answers of Tosfos when it comes to when can you violate something mishum kavod abrios when it's a gnai gadol versus a gnai katan. Like this, to me, you can't have a gnai katan that's more katan than this. But afal pichein, listen to what the Ramah says. The Ramah writes in Hilchos Tzitzis and Simen Yid Gimel, Siv Gimel, im nifsak echad min atzitzios u'mizbayesh leishe below talis, diyachol lelov sho below bracha mikoach kavod abrios. So he says, he has a situation where he's wearing a talis in shul, or it's Shabbos, and he can't fix it right now, and he's sitting in shul, and he doesn't want to be the only guy sitting in shul not wearing a talus. Every other person in shul has a talus on. He's not going to have a talus on. Everybody's going to come, oh, everything okay, everything okay. You know, I don't know about you, but I hate it when people ask me that. So is everything okay? Right? You want to borrow my talus? Leave me alone. I just want to sit in shul and daven. Right? So this guy's embarrassed not to be sitting in shul with his talus on. So the Ramah says he's allowed to sit in shul with the talus on. He's allowed to sit in shum kavod abrios. He can sit in shul with the talus on. That's not a major gnai at all, right? And in fact, if you look at the Mishnah Berurah over there, he talks about it dafka on Shabbos when he didn't have an option to fix it, and dafka when let's say it would have ripped before Shabbos, and he really should have fixed it before Shabbos, and he knew about it, and he was just lazy and he didn't do it. So he quotes Rabbi Kiva Eiger, who says, "No, you can still be makel. You can still put it on without a bracha, and be makel mishum kavod abrius." It's an unbelievable chiddush that the Ramah has here, and that this the poskim seem to go with it. That you can mishum kavod abrius, you can be makel even on a very low level of gnai, where you're just going to be a little embarrassed and a little bit bothered and put out. That it's mutter to really violate the din b'shei v'altasa. Then the next source that he brings in is our Noda Yehuda, which I think we've spoken about it enough. And Lamaisa he quotes the Noda Yehuda that really meikar then he would have been meikel that the guy didn't have to tell, but he was machmir in the end because it was going to be nisser tmidi. Right, the person was going to be in constant violation of the Isser. And then he points out the Divrei Chaim is cholik on that, as we mentioned in Shir. We didn't speak out the Divrei Chaim, but the Divrei Chaim is cholik on him and says that that you don't have to tell, which Rav Asher is blown away by this for a different reason. He has this idea, I don't get it because he wants to be mechalik between all these cases and the case of the Noda Yehuda. No, Yehuda is a case where the woman was mezaneh, and the din is you have to be megarish your wife when she's mezaneh. That's the halacha. So he says, I don't get it. If you have a case where somebody worships avodah zarah, right? That's very embarrassing that he's now going to have to go to Beis Din. He worships avodah zarah with Edom and Asra, and he's going to go to Beis Din. And they're gonna put him to death because he was Ovid of Odazar. So he says, I don't get it. Does anyone in their right mind think that because it's terribly humiliating for him and for his family and for everybody that he's gonna go to Beis Din and be put to death because he worshipped Avodah Zarah, that the Edom aren't chayav to come and testify, and that we're just gonna sweep the whole thing under the rug? Does anybody think that? He says, no, that's cool for the mitzvah. The mitzvah is the Edom should give him Asra, they should tell him don't worship Avodah Zarah, and he, and if you do, we're going to take you to Beis Din. And then if he does it anyway, they take him to Beis Din and they testify in front of everybody and they put him to death in front of everybody. That's the halacha. That's what it is. So it's not like a case where there's no mitzvah to dafka walk around in public, not in public with kilayim, not kilayim. It's an isser to wear kilayim. So once you're wearing the kilayim, if it's an isser derabbanan, we're not going to say anything to you until you get home. Because that's not goof of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is not to walk around ripping kilayim off of people or walk around taking off kilayim from yourself. Is it then? Don't wear kilayim. He says, here, the mitzvah is to divorce your wife if she was mezaneh. So who cares if it's going to be embarrassing? That's goofy what it is. So that's, he leaves it as a tzarachi and he says, look, obviously nobody agrees with me. He's like, no, the Yehuda doesn't think I'm right. The Divrei Chaim doesn't think I'm right. But he says, okay, that's his opinion. He didn't think there was any room to be makel here, mitam kavod abrius, because it's that's goofy what it is. So I don't know. You think he's right? What do you think? I didn't think he was right. I thought the Noda Yehuda and the Divrei Chaim had a much stronger opinion than what Rav Asher is saying. No, it's the exact same case of Kilayim. It's not the case of Ovid Avodah Zarah. It's the case of Kilayim. Right? Meaning, the case of Kilayim is, there's no mitzvah or aveira to dafka be in the street with Kilayim, take them off, not take them off. Right? We're just saying that if you're in a situation where this happens, how much do you have to tell the person? In the case where the Edom see somebody worship Avodah Zarah, you're right. They have a mitzvah d'oraisa to go and be made against him. That's what their mitzvah is. There's no mitzvah for an Eid Echad who was mezaneh, who now knows that someone's usher to their husband. It's exactly the case. We said it before. We said the case of second Teretz of Tosfos. Right? That's exactly the case in our Gemara in Shavuos, where Rashi says, what's the case where the guy knows Eidus? He knows Eidus that the husband is still alive, and if the woman's going to stay with the husband, she's going to be in violation of Arayus her whole life. So therefore, you mechuyev to go and tell. Right? That's the case. It's not the case where they see real Eidus. So the difference is, if it's a case where we call Shei Val Tasa, so then you can be Mekel. If it's a case where we call Kumvase, you have to be Machmir. I don't really understand what his problem is with the whole case. It's hard for me to understand why he's medamet to a case of a avodah zarah versus not. I think it's exactly the case spelled out, came out 100% like our Gemara, according to Rashi and according to the second answer of Tosfos. So, okay, Lamaisa, so that's what he says. He has another case here from Rav Avadya Yosef, which also comes up in earlier Shas and Tshuvas that he quotes. So he says that there was a woman who unfortunately was mezana in her youth. She's not as an Eishes Ish, as a Pnuya. And so she had relations as a Pnuya and she had a baby. And whatever she did with the baby, she did, I don't know, she gave it up for adoption or whatever. Whatever happened, happened. It doesn't say. But then she becomes a balas tshuva of some sort. Either she just becomes an actual balas tshuva, or she just does tshuva, and which is really the same exact thing if you think about it. And she now has a new beautiful wonderful husband, and she has a new child, and she has a boy, and she never told her husband that she ever had any kids before. So now they want to do a pidyon haben. So is it mutter to do the pidyon haben under these circumstances? So they asked. This shaila was asked a number of times. Over the years, Rav Avadya quotes a couple of earlier svarim to talk about it. But Lamaisa, Rav Avadya comes to the conclusion, basically he's cheshbonning, what's the big deal if you do a pidyon haben or not pidyon haben? The biggest deal is if you're going to make a bracha levatala. So they're going to go to the pidyon haben, they're going to make a bracha on the pidyon haben, it's a bracha levatala. So he goes through, what's the iser bracha levatala? This is a big shaila, right? You guys know that in the Gemara is mashma that if you make a bracha levatala, you violated lo sisa shem Hashem lokech lashav. Right? That's what it says. So some rishonim say, okay, that's what it is. You're violating aseres adibros. If you make a bracha levatala, you violated the aseres adibros. Right? Okay, not something we want to be doing. So therefore, it's an iser doraisa. And other rishonim say, no, when the Gemara says, lo sisa Hashem lekech lashav, that's when you mamish say Hashem's name for no good reason. When you make a bracha levatala, there you're saying Hashem's name in the context of praise. It's just that Simchas Chazal didn't warrant it, they didn't mandate it. So therefore, a bracha levatala, it's not doraisa, it's just an iser derabbanan. So Rav Avadya says, it seems to him that that's the ikar psak. That the Issa Durabbanan of a Bracha, the Bracha Levatala is an Issa Durabbanan, and therefore this would be subject to the rule of Gadol Kavod HaBrios, that's Doche, an Issa Durabbanan. And he paskined Lemaisa that this is a case where she doesn't have to say anything, and they could do the Pidyon HaBen, it could be a fake out, and he'll say an Issa, he'll violate an Issa Durabbanan. By saying the bracha levatala, and it'll be mishum kavod abrius, it'll be mutter. Okay. Next case, he has this is also a tshuva in the Divrei Chaim, and he has the exact same tshuva in the Shol Meshiv, and I'm sure it's come up 1,000 times since then, which is that you have a person who goes prematurely gray, right? Person goes prematurely gray, and I don't know exactly at what time in history that they came out with the hair dyes, but apparently in the days of the Tzanzer and apparently in the days of Rishol Nathanson they had it. So they said, "Are you allowed to color your hair?" Mishum kavod abrios. The person is very embarrassed to be walking around all the time with gray hair, so the Divrei Chaim was machmir. Yeah, it would be an Isser of Beged Isha. Generally speaking, the Gemara has a couple of examples of shaving yourself in certain places. Nowadays, it's become very mainstream for men also to get rid of all their hair. And no, I'm serious. It's like normal. Okay, whatever. Nice it is. It's normal. I don't know if that changes the halacha, but it's still much more normal than it used to be. It used to be weird. So, but now it's come out. It's a thing. And also nowadays they have hair dyes called Just for Men, right? That's the name of the company. So I don't know if that changed the halacha either. But in those days it certainly wasn't the mainstream thing for a man to do. Divrei Chaim in general was machmir in these inyanim. Divrei Chaim has the original tshuva against tefillin mirrors. So he basically says that, he says it's a very hard tshuva to understand. There's a Tzitz Eliezer whose entire tshuva is dedicated to explaining that to Divrei Chaim. because it's very hard she would understand what he means by that. Tzitz Eliezer comes to the opinion basically that says that since carrying around a pocket, what the Divrei Chaim meant was, I don't know if he passes this way himself, so since carrying around a pocket mirror is vadai a violation of a doraisa of Beged Isha, and we have a machlokas rishonim of makom yesh brosh laniach shtei tefillin, so the question is, which one, what's the halacha when it comes to, it says there's enough space on a person's head to wear two pairs of tefillin. So does it mean front to back? That's the standard. The more mainstream opinion is that you can wear, there's enough space on a person's head, like from here to here, that he could put two pairs of tefillin. So does it mean front to back? He could put two pairs of tefillin. But side to side, there's not enough room on a person's head to put two pairs of tefillin. Or does it mean, no, dafka side to side, you could even put, meaning when we say b'nei necha, it doesn't mean dafka where the bridge of your nose is. It means you have some space to put, you could put two pairs of tefillin even side to side. So that was the shaila that's what the Divrei Chaim says. He says, I don't understand, how could you violate an Isra Doraisa Beged Isha just so you could, because l'maisa we paskin makom yesh brosh laniach shtei tefillin. So that's what the Tzitz Eliezer explains. What he meant is that even though the accepted opinion is to put the tefillin front to back, that's what you're able to do. And that was, by the way, people used to wear a Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. That's what they did. They wore them both. They didn't change their Chazaras HaShatz. They put both on at the same time. And that was the old school way to wear Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. They put two tefillin on at the same time. So he says, but there's a vada yisur doraisa of carrying around a little mirror, and he says, and so under those circumstances, you could be makil to say that the lesser shita of the Rishonim, which is the more dasyachid opinion of the Rishonim, that tefillin could be side to side, that there's really a wide ranging space on the forehead where the tefillin can be. So he says, better that than to walk around carrying a mirror. Right, so that's. That was his tshuva, anti-tefillin mirror tshuva. But you see, he was very machmir in areas where he held it was a vada yisur doraisa to walk around with a little compact mirror. So here also, he says, vada yisur doraisa to color your hair, and it's covered abrius, it doesn't help. So he gives a few reasons. He says maybe you could be makel during covered abrius, but he says, not since an yisur doraisa, that's number one. And number two, he says you could have gone the other direction. It says if you... It's a weird vort that he says. He says maybe the whole isser is that the guy has some black hair and some gray hair. But if you take the whole, you could dye your entire hair and your entire beard white, so you look like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So then it won't be embarrassing anymore. You'll just that'll be stately or very distinguished. So therefore, he said there's no reason to be makel to dye your hair black, which is an isser doraisa under those circumstances. Okay, l'maisa the Sholem Eshiv is makel. He writes the whole tshuva. And the Sholem Eshiv is like, no, it's probably Nisa Daraisa, so you can't do it. He goes, he's Mavara, the sheet of the Rambam Barichus. And then at the end, he's like, yeah, even if the Rambam holds Nisa Daraisa, most other Rishonim argue on the Rambam, so you can say the Halacha is like them, so you can make it here, Mishum Kavar Bris. Okay, that's like the whole tshuva. At the end, he just does a U-turn where he backs out of the whole thing. So, okay. Lamaisa, so that's another Shiloh of Kavar Bris, whether or not it's mutter to... whether or not it's mutter to dye one's hair. So Lamaisa, we see... from all these cases, that the Achronim definitely took Chazal's idea of Kavod Abrios and ran with it a little bit. Okay, Bekitzer, want to just finish up on time, but Bekitzer, we just want to go through. Nobody ever talks about where we get this idea of Kavod Abrios from. It's so weird that like we're using it, we're pushing aside Yisurim Del Raisa B'Shev Al Tas Yisurim Del Rabbanan B'Kumba Asay Dine Mominis, etc. But where is this source for the concept of Gadol Kavod Abrius? So the truth is, it's not such a mystery. You could look at the source being, V'Hisalamta, right? V'Hisalamta would teach us at least that there's Kavod Abrius when it comes to Dinei Mominus. And then we also have the concept of Meis Mitzvah in the Torah, where it talks about Kavod Abrius by a dead body. But you don't get that one all-encompassing source which tells us everything we want to know. That's the problem. In other words, the Gemara in Brachos, when it talks about gives all the examples of Kavod Abrius, it almost presupposes that we know there's a concept of Kavod Abrius. Let's just see what it applies to and what it doesn't apply to. That's the strangest thing, right? That what's the real background source of Kavod HaBrios. So you have this Alamta, that's only by Dinei Mamon, it's fine. But we know there's such a thing as Kavod HaBrios by Yisrael Vater also. And then you have Meis Mitzvah, Lachoso, right? So none of that really gives us the big background source. So that's what's a little bit perplexing, is that nobody actually speaks out on what's the real source. So you have the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where they talk about, where Rashi mentions also over there, that when you kill the behema, right, if you have a case of an Isha who violated an Avera, or even a man violated an Avera with the behema, so you kill the person and you kill the behema. So Rashi points out over there, and the Gemara points out, why is it that you kill the behema? What did the behema do wrong? Behema doesn't have Bechira Chafshis. So what did it do wrong? So nice, you don't want this behema walking down the street, and then people will say, oh, that's the behema that Ploni was Nichshol with. Right? So that would be a tremendous blow to that person's Kavod HaBrios, and therefore we know that you have to kill the behema for that reason. That's one source that seems to indicate, underlying, that there is a concept of Kavod HaBrios that we actually are willing to kill a quote-unquote innocent animal for the sake of Kavod HaBrios. Similarly, so Rashi points out that he says maybe the whole source of Kavod HaBrios is this Alamta. That's Rashi in Megillah, points out that maybe the whole source of Kavod HaBrios is this Alamta, and that's the original source that everything else is working off of. And if you got a chance to see one of the, I think, a great grandson of the Chasam Sofer, he has the same name as his grandfather, who was the second son of the Chasam Sofer, was, I think, the Shevet Sofer. The Ksav Sofer was the oldest son, and the Shevet Sofer was the second son, and I forgot his first name. And he had a grandson, the Soros Tshuva, who was had the same name as him. So the name I can't remember, that was also the name of the Soros Tshuva. They were all named, what was their last name? Right, not exactly, right, there you go. Really, Schreiber, right? Schreiber was the last name in the Yiddish, and they in the Svarim they wrote Sofer, because, you know, Lashon Kodesh, so they wrote it as a Sofer. But in their lifetimes, they were called Schreiber. So the Zoras Tshuva, right? That's a, it happens to be a family related. Two cute trivia questions. What was the Chasam Sofer's last name? What was Rabbi Kiviger's last name? Last name was Gins, right? So Kiviger Gins. I think he writes on his tshuva. He took his uncle's name was Eger, I think. I don't really know why no one is Rabbi Kiva Eger, but in the tshuva he signs off his last name Gins. So okay, doesn't matter. So So in the Soros Tshuva, he writes something very interesting. He just writes that the concept of Kavod HaBrios stems from Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tselem. B'Tselem Elokim Asa Esa Adam. That every human being is created B'Tselem Elokim, and therefore, inherently, you should give Kavod to every single human being, including Goyim, he writes. And therefore, because since it's based on Tzelem Elokim, both a Jew and a Goy have this gedder of Tzelem Elokim, and it's worth it to be mechabed certainly anyone who even reminds us of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Kavod HaBrios is really Kavod Shemayim, and it's based on the fact that we are human representations of the Ribbono Shel Olam Kaviyachol. And similarly, we find in the Rambam, I'll close with this, that the Rambam writes, in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Chav Dalet, Alach Yud, Kol Eilu Advarim Lefi Mashiyiru Adayan, Shezer Roy Lekach, V'Shashot Tzricha, V'Chol Yiyu Maisav L'Shem Shamayim. Here he's talking about certain things that Dayanim will do when it's necessary because of the time period. V'Al Yiyye Kavod HaBrios Kal Be'enav, and don't, meaning the Dayan, he has a certain amount of power, but he should not take the kavod of others lightly. Sharehu dokas losa se shel divrayam v'kol shekein. Listen to this lashon. He says, don't ever take kavod HaBrios lightly. And kal v'chomer kavod bnei Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Certainly the kavod of the Jews. Hamachzik and betoras haemes, because they keep the Torah. Sheyezar shelo yeras kavodam. Certainly don't destroy the kavod of a Jew. El lahosif b'kavod hamakam dovad. According to Mishnah Perkei Avos, and obviously the greatest kavod to the Torah is to follow the Torah. So the Rambam closes off by pointing out, similar to the Soros Tshuva, that every case of Kavod HaBrios is really Kvod Shemayim, and certainly the Mechaber, the Jewish people, is not Kvod Shemayim. I said I was done, but then I realized I forgot one extra thing I wanted to say. So you'll have to forgive me, or not. You might not forgive me, so I'm sorry. But like just one thing, the Or Sameach has a very interesting comment. Now, the reason I like this comment is because, you see, I like certain historical things. So the Or Sameach has a comment where he destroys a shita of the Besamim Rosh. You guys ever heard of the Besamim Rosh? It's the Shailos HaTshuvos that were not written by the Rosh. It's known it was a forgery that tricked a lot of people. It was an excellent forgery. But it was completely made up. I forgot the guy's name, but it was completely made up by a maskil who was very anti-religious and was a great scholar, and he was very knowledgeable in all areas of Torah. But his goal was historians whom I trust. They have said mostly. I'm saying this mostly based on Mark Shapiro, but I've seen this in other sources as well. That the author of the Besamim Rosh was a virulently anti-rabbinic person, and he believes very strongly that he wrote the Besamim Rosh to mock the Torah, not to add to the Torah at all, but rather to make the Torah look silly. And he had to include a lot of nice tshuvas that looked normal because he wanted to establish credibility, and therefore therefore people would give credibility to those things that were mocking the words of the Chachamim, etc. So I'm not a big fan of the Besamim Rosh, and neither was the Or Sameach. The Or Sameach makes fun of the Besamim Rosh, and he doesn't quote it by name even, but he writes that there's somebody who wrote that any time since the Chachamim were makel by Mafis Mursa, the Mokum Tsar, they were makel on a Malach Hashem Tzricha Legufa, if you hold it's only in a Siddur Abanan, so therefore they were any time there's a Mokum Tsar, you're allowed to be makel, and tsar is worse than embarrassment, and therefore, anytime there's a tsar involved, you can be lenient. Mishum kavod abrius, and the Or Sameach goes crazy about this. He does not like it at all, and he says that he says it's not true. Really, bizayon is worse than tsar, and you don't just have the right to be makel on an issur derabban at any time. You're going to be in some kind of tsar, and he leaves it basically at that. Lemaisa. It's very important to keep in mind that although we've spent a lot of time discussing the klalim and the pratim of kavod abrios, every kavod abrios shaila is different, and it's not something which can even be dealt with by even a nice Talmud Chacham. It's really something that needs the haskama of major, major poskim to figure out which are the types of cases where you can be makel and violate an issur derabanan, or even an issur deraisa b'shev al tasa, to know what to put into the guise of kavod abrios, what not. It's a very dangerous and slippery slope, and therefore, but just to obviously seek out guidance on all of these areas is very, very crucial. But like I said, it's still a beautiful topic that got to discuss.